All I know is that Charlie's running his hands down the sides of my body is making me want to get out of the water, start a fire, wrap up in a blanket with him, and make someday today. But I haven't accomplished my goal yet, so I force myself to concentrate on the task at hand.
That one's too hard. Next?
Next is the breaststroke, Charlie tells me.
Is this a trick?
No, he says, gathering me close to him. Okay, maybe.
I wrap my arms around his neck and smile up at him.
See, this isn't so bad. You don't actually hate the water.
He gives me the best look ever, like he's drowning in my eyes.
I don't hate anything when I'm with you.
I stare back at him. I believe in him and everything he says. The stars wink down at us, like they're blessing our union. His lips find mine and we kiss like we've spent our whole lives starving for each other. I cannot get enough of Charlie Reed, and I absolutely know the feeling is mutual. The heat gets hotter. It's like we can't possibly get close enough. But then we do. Chapter 18. Charlie and I are lying together wrapped in a plush blanket he keeps in the back of his truck. I check my watch. It's late, far past my curfew, but there's still time. Sunrise isn't for another few hours. I'm grateful my dad finally gave me the freedom to decide when the night is over.
You need to go home? Charlie asks.
Soon, but not yet. I wish my answer could be not ever. Charlie pulls me closer, and we snuggle into each other.
Have you thought any more about Berkeley? I whisper.
He stares up at the stars.
I keep thinking about after the surgery, when I couldn't swim, and I just didn't know who I was at all, and neither did anyone else. I've been in school with these people for years, and they just see me as the guy in the pool. Then, when I wasn't in the pool anymore, it was like I was no one to them. And I just think that's bullshit. I'm not worthless if I'm not a swimmer. I don't have to live that life. Just because I liked doing something for a long time doesn't mean I can't change my mind.
I nod. I get that, I say, and I truly do. But I can't help feeling there's something more underneath what he just told me. Maybe it's a fear of failure or pride he can't get past. I don't want him wasting a chance to expand his horizons on useless emotions like that. But I also know what it feels like to watch people living from the sidelines, I continue. You don't want that either. You might not want to be just the guy in the pool, but you're not the guy who doesn't try either. Maybe you won't end up on the team, but don't you want to see if you could? I would. Something profound and true hits me. I realize this is how I have to live my life from here on out. I think it applies equally well to Charlie. Do everything you can right now and then decide, because now is all that matters, I tell him. Charlie kisses my shoulder. He looks like he's deep in thought.
Maybe I'll call the coach tomorrow, he says. And speaking of tomorrow, I hope you're ready for the greatest sunrise on the planet.
I gasp as the adrenaline kicks in. I look up at the sky. Blackness is giving way to a light purple. I check my watch again. 1:42. There's a brief moment of relief before I realize something is really wrong. The second hand on my watch isn't moving.
What time is it, Charlie?
I whisper, horrified.
450?
I feel the life drain out of me.
It's not waterproof,
I say, almost to myself.
What isn't? Charlie asks.
I jump up, frantically grabbing my clothes and cell phone. I click off the Do Not Disturb icon and see I have 14 missed calls from my dad. How could I have thought I didn't need him watching over me anymore, even for a second? Oh my God! How can I undo what I did? I'm such an idiot. Dad should have never trusted me. Tears stream down my face as I start sprinting back up toward the road. Maybe I can still race the dark to my house. I'm young. I'm fast. I hear Charlie's footsteps crashing behind me.
Just stay until the sun.
I have to go. I yell back at him over my shoulder. Please, we have to leave now. Please.
What's wrong?
But I'm sobbing too hard and time is too precious to answer.
Katie, tell me.
I keep running and running. The sky is turning from a deep violet to a pale blue. I'm never going to make it home before the sun is up. But I still have to try. For me. For my dad. For Morgan. For Charlie. Who's never going to forgive himself once he finds out why I'm so panicked. Even though he did absolutely nothing wrong. Even though my bad decisions are what led to all this. Gravel spews up behind me in the parking lot. Charlie pulls up in his truck and rolls down the window.
Katie, you're scaring me. What the hell is going on?
I jump into the passenger seat.
Just go!
I scream. Charlie guns the engine. The truck flies down the road, faster, faster. But no mode of transportation barring time travel could beat the sun now. Especially not this old junker. The first hint of sunlight is cresting over the hill behind us. Crepuscular rays, those lines of light little kids always draw around the sun, stream forth from the fiery yellow star. I've never seen anything so beautiful or terrifying in my whole life.
You have to get me home, Charlie,
I beg, even though I know he's doing everything possible, the absolute best he can. He floors it. The truck lurches ahead. But it's just not going to be enough to save me. We screech up to my house a few minutes later. I open the door before we've even skidded to a stop. I tumble out of the passenger seat and go sprinting for my house. The sun is rising above the hills now, rays piercing through the trees in my yard. I feel them, warm on my skin, my arms, my face. I'm fully exposed. I feel warm, then burning hot. I am on fire. I pound on the door, but my dad doesn't come. I fumble for my key and finally get it into the lock. I throw open the front door and shoot inside. It slams behind me as I fall to the ground, trembling and crying. The only thing I can do now is pray I haven't caused myself irreparable damage. It's still possible. Anything's possible, right? Maybe all that will happen is I get a bad sunburn and a big fat lecture from my dad. Miracles happen. Charlie's pounding on the other side of the door.
Can you just talk to me, Katie?
But I can't. How could I? What would I say? Charlie keeps knocking and calling my name. I run upstairs to get away from it. From him. I've ruined everything. Everything. Nothing can ever be okay again. From my room, I peer out the window. Charlie still hasn't left. My dad's car squeals up to the curb. He slams the door, looking like he's seen 1,001 ghosts.
like he's aged a million years in a single night. Morgan is with him. Even though she's mad at me, she's with him. I'd do anything to take back the pain I've caused everyone. To myself. I've never felt so alone in my life.
Is she in there?
I can hear my dad screaming. He has Charlie by the shoulders and is shaking him, as if that can rewind time.
Is she inside?
Dad bursts through the door before Charlie can answer. Outside, Morgan is still yelling at Charlie.
How could you let this happen?
Let what happen?
Charlie yells back. He looks like a bewildered little boy running his hands through his hair until it stands on end every which way. The sad truth of the situation finally dawns on Morgan and on me.
She never told you?
She swore to us that she did.
Told me what?
Charlie looks pale and shaken. Here it comes, the words that will change everything. The words I should have said to him myself.
She's sick, Charlie. Katie's sick, Morgan tells him.
What are you talking about?
She has a disease, XP. She can't be in the sun at all, Morgan explains. It could kill her. She runs inside after my dad, leaving Charlie standing all alone. On the outside, looking in, trying to digest the worst news possible. I'm not who he thought I was. Not by a long shot. Chapter 19.
I'm so, so sorry.
I'm saying it to Morgan, but it's for my dad, too. It's the first thing I've said since they found me in my room. I was silent when they asked me if I was okay. I was silent as they handed me clothes for going outside. I was silent the whole car ride over. Because what could I say? After so many years of being responsible and safe, after finally convincing my dad I could take care of myself, it turns out I couldn't. I lied to my dad and Morgan. I lied to Charlie. But my silence also came from the crushing realization that I'd been lying to myself, too. It's okay, Morgan says. I guess having a near-death experience makes people forgive you really fast. No, Morgan. I'm really sorry. She grabs my hand, and I know that she understands that I mean I'm not just sorry for making her worry, but that I'm also sorry for everything I said to her.
We love you more than anything, Peanut, my dad tells me.
It makes me feel even worse that they're not mad at me, that they're just worried and sad and spent. It's all my fault. The three of us are sitting in stiff plastic chairs in the hospital waiting room, where Dr. Fleming has an office. I'm completely exhausted, though I'm not sure at this point whether it's more emotional or physical. My face is burning up. My arms feel like they're engulfed in flames. Morgan assures me this is how normal people feel after a few too many hours in the sun. But I'm not so sure. It feels ominous. Even more ominous is my dad's face right now. He's grinding his teeth. His eyebrows are furrowed so tightly together that they fuse into a single entity. He sits with his head in his hands, like it's too heavy for his neck to hold up anymore.
Why do they use such uncomfortable chairs? Morgan muses. We're here to get healthy, and we're going to leave with back issues.
My dad tries to smile at her. It comes off more like a grimace. I give her a little chuckle that turns into a sob. I'm sure everything's fine, Morgan says, putting a hand on my leg. It was just for a second, if that. This is nothing. We're all good here. Except that while she's assuring me nothing's wrong, we're both staring at the girl in the waiting room who's about my age. Her hands and head shake. Her skin is covered in lesions and dark sores. We all know that might be me next. My favorite nurse appears. We're ready for you, Katie. Dad goes to stand, but I put a hand out to stop him. I'll go myself this time. If I'm old enough to practically kill myself by being so irresponsible, then I'm also old enough to face the consequences of my actions. Dad nods. As I follow the nurse into the office area, Garver bursts through the hospital doors. He runs over to Morgan. She falls into his arms, crying. Is she okay? Garver asks. Morgan doesn't answer. She just buries her head in his shoulder and falls apart. I must look like the walking dead for her to be so upset. I wonder if I actually am. Dr. Fleming gives me a warm hug when I get into the exam room. It's been a while, Katie, she says, pulling back to take a closer look at me. You've grown into a beautiful young woman. I'm sorry I haven't been at my appointments lately, I tell her, climbing up onto the examining table with heavy wooden legs. Dr. Fleming offers an understanding smile. Sometimes I think XP is harder on parents than patients. He was just trying to protect you. And look how I thanked him for all his sacrifices. I want to cry, but it's like I have no tears left in me at this point. There's no sense in looking backward, Katie, Dr. Fleming tells me. And we'll deal with whatever is in front of us together, okay? I nod. Nurse Jane takes vial after vial of blood while I stare at the brightly colored murals painted on the wall. I've learned over the years that it hurts less if I can't see the needle or all that deep red liquid coming out of me. Some vampire I am, huh? Next, I'm wheeled into the CAT scan room. I want to protest that I can walk there, but to be honest, I'm grateful not to have to. I lie there as still as possible as the lights and sounds of the machine whir around me. I guess I fall asleep, because the next thing I know, it's over, and Nurse Jane is telling me it's time to go back to the exam room. There, Dr. Fleming and Jane put on these huge magnifying goggles that look like virtual reality headsets. They proceed to carefully examine every inch of my body, talking in cryptic code the whole time. Dysplastic nevus 4 millimeters. Congenital nevus growth noted. Grouping of new lentigines here. And so on and so on. I wait and listen, wondering what it all means. Wondering what Charlie is thinking right now. If he hates me for lying to him. If I'll ever see him again. And how can I? Dad will never let that happen. Besides, why would Charlie want to see me after the way I betrayed his trust? It's over, I conclude. I was lucky to have him while I did. To experience something I never thought I would. Time to go back to being Rapunzel stuck in my room forever. I was a fool to think I could ever go to college and have a long-term relationship like a normal person. Finally, Dr. Fleming says to me, Okay, you can sit up now, Katie. I'll go get your father while you get dressed. Meet me back in my office as soon as you're ready. I pull on my leggings, drag my sweatshirt back over my head, and stuff my feet into my Converse. I trudge down the long hall and sit in the chair in front of Dr. Fleming's impressively large mahogany desk. My dad is already seated in the chair next to me, staring straight ahead. The sunlight exposure was minimal, Dr. Fleming begins.
The physical effects you're seeing right now will heal. My dad puts his hand on my arm, and we smile at each other. Maybe I didn't ruin everything after all. But, Dad winces. My stomach drops. As you know, your specific kind of XP generally lies dormant until a triggering event, she continues. We won't know if that's what this was until we get the results from your blood work and CT scans. My dad leans forward in his chair.
And if this was a triggering event?
I hold my breath, waiting for Dr. Fleming's answer. We'll cross that bridge if we come to it, she says. If you notice any symptoms, Katie, unexpected shaking, muscle pain, loss of motor function, you have to promise to tell me immediately. I nod. My hands are shaking as we speak. Is that a symptom? Or just me being tired and scared? Everything feels like a sign right now.
Any word on the UW study? My dad asks as we get up to leave.
I followed up with them last week, Dr. Fleming says. No news yet. I hope in this case that no news is good news. My dad deserves less bad news in his life. I completely crash when I get home, falling into one of those heavy, dreamless sleeps that feel like I'm lost in a big black void. I wake up much later, groggy and crabby. I don't want to eat or watch a movie or even talk to anyone. Morgan comes over and knows me well enough to just be with me, together but doing our own thing. I strum my guitar mindlessly, the chords coming out sounding dissonant and out of key. Morgan pretends to read Dear Gabby, but she doesn't ever scroll to a new question. My phone vibrates constantly. I ignore it. Nothing good can come of answering Charlie's texts. Better to cut communication off completely and move on than drag this thing out when the end result will be the same no matter what. I know I told you to play hard to get, but you have to at least see what he has to say, Morgan tells me. I shake my head even as my phone vibrates again. Morgan tosses aside her phone, grabs mine, and starts reading the texts. He's asking you if he can come over to talk to you. Don't, I tell her. Just delete them. Katie. I look up, my eyes locking into Morgan's. If I read them, I'll write back, and then he'll write back, and then we'll meet up, which we can't. No. Why can't you? You don't need to be a martyr to protect Charlie's delicate feelings. He's a big boy. I'm sure he can handle... I stop her mid-sentence. For the first time ever, Morgan has no idea how I'm feeling. I can't handle it, okay? I yell, tears streaming down my face. I can't. He's just gonna get hurt, and I can't be the one who hurts him. Now will you please just delete them? I can tell Morgan doesn't want to. I know she hates how much I'm hurting right now, that she's even willing to forgive me for being an awful, cranky beast and yelling at her when none of this is her fault. Okay, she says quietly, clicking through my phone, deleting, deleting, deleting. I nod gratefully and go back to my guitar. But it's just not sounding right tonight. Morgan watches me for a second, then picks her phone back up. I strum and realize my fingers are on the wrong strings, the wrong frets. I hold up my hand. My fingers are shaking uncontrollably. I push my guitar away before Morgan can notice. But I know. I know. Chapter 20. I can't sleep even though I'm tired.
I can't eat even though I'm hungry. I toss and turn, throw the blankets on and off because I'm alternately shivering and then sweating. I hear a car door slam, then the doorbell ring. I get out of bed and look out the window. It's Dr. Fleming. In all the years I've been seeing her, she's never come here. I always go to see her at the hospital. She's far too busy to make house calls. This is not a good sign. Although she's not delivering any news I don't already assume. My dad steps out onto the porch and closes the front door behind him. I can't hear what Dr. Fleming says to him, but the next thing I know, he's yelling.
We should do another set of tests. They could come back different.
Her brain has begun to contract, Dr. Fleming says, loudly enough for me to hear this time. Once the neural pathways start...
What about the study? My dad bellows. What about UW? There has to be...
They shut it down, Dr. Fleming tells him, putting a hand on his shoulder. I found out this morning. There won't be a phase two. My dad breaks down at this news. He's always been so strong. He's never cried in front of me, not even when my mom died. And now he's a wreck because of me, because of my actions.
I did everything I was supposed to, he says, choking out the words. When she was little, no matter how much she cried and moaned, I wouldn't let her go outside, play in the park, go to the beach. She begged me for things she had every right to do, and I denied her all of them. To protect her. And for what? For this?
Dr. Fleming pats my father's back as emotion overcomes him. XP is a disease that tends to take the joy out of a child's life, she tells him. But all these years I've known Katie, she's never complained, never sulked, only seen the good in things. And the way she talks about you, I've never seen a teenager so openly adore her father. She's crying along with Dad now, and I'm crying with them both. They hug. Katie's not only held on to her joy, she brings other people joy. Katie shines brighter than almost any patient I've ever treated, and that's because she's so well-loved. You're a good father, Jack. My dad swipes at his face with his sleeve and nods.
How long?
It's hard to know for sure, Dr. Fleming tells him.
Days? Weeks? Months? What?
And in typical Dr. Fleming fashion, she tells him, most likely one of those. I feel numb, like I'm frozen in time. I can't do anything but blame myself for ruining everyone's life, including my own. How could I have been so ungrateful? This is what I get for not wanting the life I had anymore, for wanting so much more. I get to have no life at all. A life cut even shorter than it already was going to be. I've got to make this better somehow. I'm sitting with my dad in the dark room later. He's dipping photos in solution, drying them, hanging them. Doing what he does best. You know I know, right? He stops what he's doing. Stares at me. Clears his throat.
What?
I heard you and Dr. Fleming talking on the porch earlier, when you thought I was sleeping, I tell him. Dad comes over and scoops me up in a hug.
I'm sorry, he says over and over. I'm so sorry.
I tell him it's okay, and I'm sorry too, more times than I can count. I've been thinking all day about how I can possibly make some meaning out of this awful situation. And what I've finally come up with is this. I have to find a way to give back. One last message of love. I suddenly know what I can do for my dad. I'll be upstairs, I tell him. When you're done down here, we can order some takeout, okay?
That's it, Katie?
He asks, palms up with a little shrug.
No questions?
I shake my head. Nope. An hour later, he makes his way to the den. I'm sitting on the couch, still typing away on my computer. I've been working hard on my masterpiece, and it's almost complete.
I'm starving, my dad says. Should we order from Hunan Chinese?
I make one last change and look up at him.
Huh?
I said, are you in the mood for Chinese? He says.
What are you so engrossed in?
I turn my computer around so he can see it.
Chinese? Sure, always. You know that.
And I've been making you an online dating profile. My dad is momentarily floored.
What?
He asks, his mouth hanging open. But really now? This is a long time coming. No one should have to be alone. Everyone should have someone special. That's basically the key to happiness, as I found out with Charlie. What do you think? I ask, showing him two different options for his profile picture. I like your hair in this one, but in the other one you have your camera. Dad tries to force my laptop shut.
Nope, this is not happening.
I stay firm. This is happening. You need to go on some dates. You can even help me write it. Sit. My dad starts to protest again, but I shoot him my most serious look. He seems to accept that I'm not joking around here and will not give up on this idea. He plops down next to me. Here's what I have so far. World's greatest father and handsomest photographer. My dad makes a buzzer noise.
Vito.
I ignore him and continue. Looking for fellow adventurer interested in art, photography, nostalgia about the supersonics.
Supersonics? Now that's important,
my dad says, nodding. And a partner in crime to travel the world. I look up to see whether he is getting all this. But he's staring off into space, at the wall, at one of the pictures he and my mom took way back when.
I don't travel, he finally says, shaking his head.
You will, though, I tell him. I don't add the second part of what I'm thinking, which is, you can again, after I'm gone. It's like my dad hears my unspoken thoughts. The air is basically sucked out of the room. He gets up off the couch and turns to leave.
All right. We're not talking about this.
I grab his sleeve. Please, I want to. I have to. He stops, exhales long and loudly, like a creaky old radiator. I pat the couch next to me. We had each other before, and now I am trying to gather my courage to say what neither of us has acknowledged out loud yet. We lost Mom, and you're gonna lose me too.
No, my dad protests. There's always a chance that...
I know it sucks, for you probably even more than me. But reality is reality, I tell him. We've always known it's a matter of when, not if. And it is going to happen, like it or not. Nothing in history has ever been so hard to say. From the looks of my dad, nothing in history has ever been so hard to hear. But we need to talk about these things while we still can. He needs to know how much I love and appreciate everything he's done for me. I take a deep breath and continue my speech. I want you to travel.
and start photographing the world again. I want everyone to see your photos, Dad. And with that, he breaks down in tears in front of me. Another first. I'm honestly kind of proud of him. For so many years, we've pretended to be okay to each other. And now it's okay to let each other know we're not. I want my dad to know that some good can come of this. That he can have all his dreams back when I'm gone, if he'll only let himself. That I want more than anything for him to be whole again. And that he can be, even without me or Mom. He has to be, or I won't be able to bear what comes next. Stop, my dad says through his tears. I can't. I forge ahead even though it's hard to weather his grief. I just want you to have as great a life as the one you've given me. I need to know you'll try to be happy and have adventures and someone to share them with because, well, that's the best part. Dad composes himself with a few deep cleansing breaths, like we learned from those meditation videos we tried a while back. When I can see he's almost ready to agree, I try to close the deal fast. Just go on one date, I urge him. Pick a rando lady and take her out, please. He finally nods. Okay. I grab his hand in mine. Promise. I promise, he tells me. I wrap my arms around him, and we hug each other tightly. My tears fall fast on his shoulder. His tears soak into mine. I'm the first to break away. Now let's call Hunan Chinese, I say, wiping my face on my shoulder. Dad gives me a smile and says,
You go upstairs and rest for a bit. I'll order us dinner.
My heart feels like it's somehow stitching itself back together. I know I can still make a difference for as long as I'm here. And maybe even after, if I work fast enough. Chapter 21. The doorbell rings 45 minutes later, so I head downstairs. Our dinner is served, I yell as I take the last step and see my dad still sitting on the couch.
Hey, can you get that, honey?
He asks, his eyes never leaving the baseball game on the TV screen.
It's full count with two outs and two men on base.
I laugh at how intense he's being about a regular season matchup. Sure. I walk to the door and open it. My mouth falls open. It's not our delivery guy after all. I slam the door shut and fall against it.
I think you better come here,
I yell to my dad. But he's already standing right in front of me.
I think you better let him in,
he says, offering me a hand up. I take it.
How did you know it was Charlie?
Because I'm the one who called him, he says. Having someone to share your life with is the best part, right? Isn't that what you just told me?
I can't see him, I whisper. I mean, can I?
Go,
he says, opening the door and shooing me outside.
Talk.
Charlie's standing there, holding out two bags from Hunan Chinese. After a moment, he says,
Dinner is served?
And we both laugh a little.
How does he do that? Take an awkward moment and make it feel not as awkward.
Still, his ease doesn't make me feel any less uneasy. It's like the first time we met all over again.
You do exist, he says. This time, I was positive I dreamed you.
I start to smile, but stop when I realize that this is not what I came out here to do. I know what my dad said,
and I know what I want. But if there's one thing I'm sure of, it's that you can't always get what you want in this life. This is for closure. My gift to Charlie so he can move on. Letting him go. I'm sorry I didn't tell you. That was unforgivable, and I wish I could make it up to you. But unfortunately, this arrangement... I gesture to him, and then me, indicating, you know, us. It can't go on. My speech is coming out oddly formal and stilted. I take a deep breath and try to sound normal. You and I continuing to see each other is just... a really bad idea. And I look up at Charlie, and he's biting his bottom lip. He looks like he's going to laugh, not cry, like I was worried he might. Now I feel dumber than ever. I start over. Look, love is never fair, but this is particularly unfair, like Guinness Book of Records unfair. And so it should stop. It's done. It's not you, it's me. I wince. That was even more awkward. Goodbye, I say in closing, holding my hand out to shake his. He just stares at it. When he looks back up at me, his face is lit with one of the biggest smiles I've ever seen. That was like the worst breakup speech I've ever heard, he tells me. I don't get it. He's not accepting my breakup? That's not even a thing as far as I know. What? Charlie rolls his eyes at me.
A D minus would be generous. Zeros from all the judges. A total flop.
I've never done this before, I protest before realizing what's underneath what he's saying. He doesn't want us to break up, even after everything that's happened, and everything that's inevitably going to happen. But seriously, we can't.
We can, though, he tells me.
I stop talking and gaze into those melty eyes of his. My resolve melts with them. I want to believe we can. But how? He shrugs, like he actually heard my unspoken question.
We can, he repeats. What I can't do is stop seeing you. I tried it, and it sucks. And?
Here he makes his fingers into quotation marks, and his voice sounds formal like I did before.
It can't go on.
I laugh, but the pain I feel is very real. I don't want to hurt him more than I already have. That would kill me before the stupid XP does. Charlie. He jumps back in before I can start protesting again.
Katie, you can either have spent the past few weeks changing my life and becoming my favorite person, only to leave me standing on your lawn like a chump, or we can keep making this the best summer of our lives.
I shake my head. He's crazy. Most guys would be running for the hills and thanking their lucky stars I let them off the hook so easily. And here Charlie is, trying to convince me we should stay together, even though our relationship is completely doomed.
I've done my research, Charlie says, dead serious now. I know what XP is. I know what's going on. But we're not people who don't try. You knew that before I did.
I finally break down, laughing and crying. Why choose when both fit the moment so well?
I'm not going to sit back and watch this happen, he tells me. The choice is mine and I'm making it. I want to be with you.
I wipe my eyes, look into his, throw my arms around his neck, and kiss him like my life depends on it. And in some ways, maybe it does. It's the kind of kiss,
real and passionate. People probably wait their whole lives to experience. And I'm lucky enough to have mine now. I realize that even in the worst of times, there's always a ray of hope. Charlie is mine. As I'm sitting on the couch between my dad and Charlie a little later, happily slurping up lo mein, I can't help thinking that despite the enormous poop sandwich I've been dealt, I'm still grateful for everything my life has given me. For everything I don't have. My mom, a group of friends, the hope of a happily ever after. There's so much I do have, and always have had. And now there's Charlie. I think about what he said to me earlier, and I feel the exact same way. He exists. I didn't dream him up. And as sure as I feel his warmth next to me on the couch, as his leg brushes against mine, I know that we're not just a summer fling. That what we feel for each other is everlasting. That nothing can tear us apart. Nothing. And that includes dying. Chapter 22. I have to beg and plead, but I convince my dad to go see Charlie's big return to the pool. He's been working his butt off ever since we swam together on what turned out to be both the best night and worst day of my life. And I'll be damned if I'm not going to be there to cheer him on along with everyone who ever supported him in swimming, including his friends, family, and former coach, and, I hope, a new one from Berkeley. It's kind of a pain to prepare for the trip to the high school pool. I have to slather myself in 3 coats of extra-strength prescription sunscreen and dress in thick layers that don't match the summery weather. Dad has to apply a special protective film to the windows of his car to prevent UV rays from penetrating them, plus install basically what's like a 2-way mirror between the front seat and the back, as in he can see behind him, but I can't see through it and no light can get through. It's a weird way to travel. Like I am someone uber famous in a limo, too snobby to interact with my driver. Come on, Dad, I say, trying to jolly him out of the fear I see in his eyes. He has to get over the dread that has kept us from venturing out much for all these years. Especially now, when it really doesn't matter how careful we are anymore. What's the worst thing that could happen? I could have a triggering event? Too late, I already did. His lips stay pressed together in a thin line. Not funny. Gallows humor, I tell him with a shrug. It's so hard to get used to the new realities each day brings. I feel old and sorry for myself, like everything that made me me is quickly being stripped away. That before long, I'll be nothing but a shell of my former self. The day I realized I couldn't play guitar anymore was the absolute worst. I cried harder than I have in my life, not only because music has always been my greatest source of pleasure and pride, but because it's also been my long-standing hope to leave my songs as my parting gift to this world. And now that can never happen. Charlie is the only one who can make me forget how fast I'm going downhill. He somehow still makes me feel like the most beautiful, talented, normal, healthy girl in the world. He acts like he doesn't even notice the stuff I can't do anymore. It's when I'm alone that I find myself on the verge of a constant panic attack. I'm terrified about what might get taken from me next. Not to mention what will happen once there's nothing left to take. I don't want to leave this planet. I'm not ready. I probably never will be. Basically, everything that's happening to me physically since that morning on the beach has been horrifying and terrifying and terrible. The only upside I can see is that at a certain point it at least stopped being surprising. So there's that. Sometimes the only way to deal with the really bad stuff is to laugh at it, I tell my dad. Now let's go watch Charlie get his scholarship to Berkeley back.
1, 2, 3, run! My dad says, grabbing his keys.
I pull the strings of my hoodie as tight as they can go, until only the tiniest bit of my eyes are showing. Dad and I used to play this game to get me to the car for appointments when I was younger. I appreciate the nod to tradition today. Naturally, the preparations for the ride took much longer than the ride itself. We're at the Purdue High Natatorium in less than 10 minutes. Dad parks as close as possible to the building, and we make another dash inside. It's humid and sticky on the pool deck. I immediately start sweating underneath my many layers of clothes. I go to unzip my hoodie. My dad reaches out a hand to stop me. He points at the wall of windows on the opposite side of the pool. The midday sun is streaming through, splashing rainbow colors onto the puddles of the pool deck.
Don't. It's not safe.
What's the worst thing? I start to say again. But then I notice the worry lines on my dad's forehead. They seem to have grown in size and number over the past few weeks. No problem, Dad. We climb into the packed stands and take a seat in the corner of the highest bleacher, where the sun can't possibly hit me. I see Charlie's parents sitting in the front row. Zoe's there, too, along with her crew. She sees me and gives me a fake smile and wave.
Hi, Kitty Price.
New friend of yours? My dad asks.
Old enemy, I reply, waving back and giving Zoe an even faker smile than the one she gave me. So she figured out who I was. I feel surprisingly calm. It's like Zoe has lost all her power over me. The worst has already happened. Nothing she could do to me would ever compare.